You are Locked On Orioles, your daily podcast on the Baltimore Orioles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Locked On Orioles. We are joined now once again by Andrew Stetka. He's been on the show before. He writes about the Orioles for massandsports.com and also for the excellent Orioles blog, Utah Street Report. Andrew, I want to talk to you because you wrote something earlier this week that I thought was pretty interesting and got me to thinking. I had a show earlier when I first started the podcast where I looked back at Orioles MVP winners of the past, and there's only been five of them in team history, and there hasn't been one since 1991 when Cal Ripken won it. The Orioles haven't had an MVP in quite a few years, and they haven't really particularly come close. But you make a really good point in this article that you wrote for Mass and Sports, which is Manny Machado really is putting up MVP-type numbers. Now, there's other guys, obviously, who are having very good seasons as well. But he is putting up the kind of numbers that traditionally would have you in the MVP conversation. He's playing for a last place team though, so obviously that's going to hurt him. But what do you think? Do you think there is? I mean, I know it's early, but do you think there's an interesting case to be made for him as an MVP candidate?
Well, yeah, like you said, it's definitely early, but there certainly is. If you look at the numbers, and that's kind of what we do this on these days. We look at offensive numbers and. And Machado is right in the mix for a potential triple crown in the American League this year. I mean, he's been doing that kind of damage with the bat so far. And, you know, he'll have an 0-for-4 every now and again like he did yesterday against the Phillies. But even then, you see how hard he's hitting the ball. And you know, some of those outs were just tough luck outs. You know, Machado's having the kind of offensive season that an MVP would. And obviously, there's no reason to believe that he won't keep it up. Everyone knows it's been well publicized. He's in a contract year, so he's playing for that big deal in the off season. And you know, before I went to write this piece on Monday at massandsports.com, I thought to myself, I wonder how many players have ever won the MVP having played for two different teams in the same season. And when I looked it up, it had never happened before. So I thought, oh, that's kind of unique, and that has a chance to happen this year. Because we all know, or at least believe, that Machado is not going to finish the season with the Orioles. Everyone has this belief that he will be traded at some point before the July 31st deadline. And, you know, I kind of thought at the beginning of the season that there was a chance the Orioles would hang on to Machado. Just because I think in the back of my mind, I thought there was a chance the Orioles would play well enough to kind of hang around and give themselves a reason, or at least an excuse maybe, to hold on to Machado through the end of the season. Obviously, with the way they've performed in the first month and a half, that's not going to happen. They're not going to be good enough to justify holding on to him. So at some point, we all believe Machado is going to be playing elsewhere. And so if he continues to hit the way he has, there's certainly a case for him to be an MVP candidate. As you mentioned, you know, the Orioles haven't had an MVP since 1991 when Cal Ripken won it. Machado himself, despite the fact that he's only 25 years old, has already finished in the top five in MVP voting in his career two times. And so, you know, when I looked back at kind of the history of the MVP voting and the Orioles and everything like that, there's only five other players since Ripken won it in 91 who have finished in the top six in MVP voting, not including Machado. So this is a guy that, you know, has really come on and been a force for the Orioles, as everyone knows. But it's just he's that rare case of a player that could do something extremely unique and really special this season.
Yeah, it brings up a really fascinating thought experiment to me, because you make a good point. Obviously, he's put up MVP numbers so far. Or at least, you know, numbers that would get him in the conversation. We know Mookie Betts and Mike Trout and others are having outstanding seasons as well. But, you know, he'd at least be in the conversation if the Orioles were good. But you bring up a good point here, which is, which I think would be really, really interesting to see if it happened. If he got traded in the American League, and obviously that's the key to this working out. But
sure,
if he gets traded in the American League, keeps up this kind of offensive pace all year and ends up having an MVP-type year, but the team that he gets traded to, say, makes the playoffs, but, you know, just by a game or two, and he's seen as kind of the reason they make it. You know, that sort of happens sometimes. You get players traded midseason. They have great, you know, second halves, and they are seen as being responsible for helping get in the playoffs. How do the writers treat that at that point? You know, a guy who's put up numbers MVP numbers over the course of the season, but split it between two teams, one who's not a contender and one where he plays a key role in getting them into the playoffs. I think that would be really interesting to see how that would turn out. As you said, it's never happened in MVP voting. I know there's been a couple examples. I think J.D. Martinez, when he got traded to the Diamondbacks, and Cespedes, when he got traded to the Mets, where people were talking about that, you know, about, well, should this guy be considered an MVP candidate because of the things he's contributed after being traded? And generally speaking, that has, you know, not been taken real seriously. But it would be interesting to see if he has overall kind of year that we're talking about, and he's seen as being a difference maker for a team that makes the playoffs, you know?
Yeah, and there are definitely a couple of candidates out there. I mean, the first one that came to my mind when I was kind of thinking about who he could go to actually was a team that you may not think about, but what if he went to the Seattle Mariners? You know, they're dealing with the loss now of Robinson Cano, not only to injury, but to a suspension for the drug use. You know, what if they happen to, you know, now the Mariners don't have a great farm system, but what if they happen to put together something and Machado ended up on the Mariners? And that's a team that, you know, maybe can't quite catch the Astros, and the Angels are in that division too, but they've played well enough this season to give themselves a chance and to give themselves the belief that they could make a playoff push. What if he ended up in Seattle somehow before the deadline and pushed them either into the playoffs as a wild card team, or maybe even as far as stealing that division from either the Astros or Angels? He could have that kind of impact, and that would be a team that, you know, you would really see it. The Minnesota Twins would be another one. What if he somehow ended up on the Minnesota Twins and they overtook the Cleveland Indians? That whole AL Central is kind of, you know, a little bit of a mess, frankly. The Indians have played around 500 ball and are barely leading that division. If he got onto one of these teams that was, you know, kind of middle of the pack and really pushed them above, that's certainly the kind of impact that he can have, and it's the kind of impact that would allow him to have that kind of, you know, MVP type of status, if you ask me.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's, like you said, there's no precedent for it in MVP voting, but there is a kind of precedent for this in Cy Young voting, at least one that I can think of off the top of my head, and that's Rick Sutcliffe in 1984 got traded from the Indians to the Cubs, and I think in June ended up going like 16-1 the rest of the way for a Cubs team that won the division and kind of surprised the baseball world, you know, that year. And he got Cy Young Award for, you know, only pitching, I guess it was a little bit more than half, probably two thirds of a season for the Cubs. But of course, that was an era when, you know, pitcher wins were still considered very important, and going 16-1 down the stretch was a big deal. So that's the kind of precedent I think we'd be right looking at, is if he did go to a team where he is seen as such a difference maker. And of course, the interesting thing there was he was traded from the American League to the National League. So only his National League numbers were considered in the voting. Whereas, you know, Machado, and under this scenario, I think we both agree he would have to almost certainly be traded within the American League for that to happen.
Sure. And I mean, even if he did get traded to the National League team, if it happened here in the next month or so, you could see him having enough of an impact on a team like perhaps the Dodgers, who of course lost Corey Seager, maybe the Cubs, who have a struggling shortstop in Addison Russell. If he did join one of those teams soon enough and made enough of an impact, I could see him, you know, garnering some attention for the NL MVP if he were to be traded over that way. But I think you're right. The most logical answer would be for it to be an American League MVP. But either way, I mean, we both know the impact that Machado has can get attention from anywhere, no matter which league.
That does bring up a real interesting question, which is if Machado were to win the award, say playing half a season with the Orioles, do the Orioles count that as an MVP winner? Do they?
I think they would want to, but I don't know if they actually could do that. Technically, I don't think they would be able to, but I don't know the actual rules on that either.
Yeah, I mean, I think if they wanted to just sort of put in their media guides, count it as an MVP win, they probably could do so.
Maybe half an MVP. Maybe they can claim they have 5.5.
That's interesting. Anyway, It's funny because I know you have to write about the Orioles a couple times a week. I have to do these podcasts. And I think it tells you something about the state of the team that we're having these kind of conversations, these theoretical conversations about whether a player might win the MVP if he gets traded to another team.
Yeah, I mean, it's either this or a conversation about David Hess and Miguel Castro and who's gonna start on Sunday. I mean, that's what it's come down to.
Yeah, it's sad times for the Orioles. Well, so let's talk about Machado. You said that you thought going into the season you felt like he wasn't going to get traded. Now, are you on the same page as most of us, thinking he's almost certainly going to get traded at this point?
Yeah, that was definitely something. That was one of my, if you want to call it a quote unquote bold prediction for the season. Now, one of those other bold predictions was that Anthony Santander would remain on the roster for the whole season, and that obviously didn't come to pass. These are kind of a few things I wrote down over at UtahStreetReport.com that were, stepping out on a ledge a little bit. But I did have a belief that at the beginning of the season that the Orioles would at least be able to play well enough to justify keeping Machado around. Maybe if they were going to stay in a slight hunt for the second wild card spot, they would be able to, to make that argument that no, we need to keep Machado on this team past the deadline, just so that we can, continue to make this push into August and September. Obviously, with the way the Orioles have played over the first month and a half, that's not going to be the case. So I definitely don't think there's any reason Machado will stay on the roster for the whole season. I definitely think they should be looking to move him. Now, the next question becomes, when do you move him? Do the Orioles wait until the July 31st deadline or a few days before, when all the, the hot stove really heats up and all the trade talk really gets going? Or do they try to do it sooner? Maybe thinking that giving a team an extra month or two with Machado will get them more value in return. I don't really know the answer to that. I don't really know that there's a huge market right this second for Machado's services. I mean, obviously there are a bunch of teams, and we spoke about them, who would be looking for a bat like that. I know that the Chicago Cubs and a lot of the media in Chicago have been writing about Machado for weeks now, and how he would be the perfect guy to plug into that lineup and really get the Cubs offense going, especially with Addison Russell struggling. I know there was a lot of talk a few weeks back when Corey Seager went down with the Dodgers as well, that he could be a fit there. But, like I said, there's tons of matches out there for him, but you don't really hear a lot of definite talk that this is something that's going to happen. I think one of the keys, and I wrote about this a little bit this morning at UtahStreetReport.com, is the Orioles just aren't ready to move him. I mean, the Orioles, stated a few weeks ago that they were going to wait until Memorial Day to reevaluate the club. Obviously, the fans and most people, just from a logical standpoint, have already done that reevaluating. This thing has been decided for weeks now that the Orioles are not going to be in contention. So there's no real reason to wait. But I think from the Orioles' standpoint, they are at least going to wait until that Memorial Day mark and kind of see where they go.
So you mentioned you have a story out in Utah Street Report this morning. You want to tell people what's the main topic of that?
It's mainly going to be about that. I also dive a little bit into David Hess and his start on Saturday and kind of what his future might hold. And the Orioles are obviously looking ahead to possibly replacing Chris Tillman in the rotation. So there's a little bit of discussion about that. I got the chance yesterday to listen to the game on the radio, being that it was an afternoon game and I was at work. I listened to the game on the radio and got to hear Greg Olson do the color commentary along with Joe Angel for a full game. So I talked a little bit about that. I got the same opportunity a few weeks ago when the team was in Detroit to listen to Brian Roberts doing the color commentary. So I've got some thoughts on those guys as well. I always find it interesting to hear these former players come back and do the color on the radio. One of my favorites over the past few years has been Ben McDonald. I know everybody's got a great affinity for McDonald on the radio. So I've enjoyed that, and I've gotten a chance to listen to these different guys, these different former players, jump into the booth with Joe Angel and do a game. And so I dive a little bit into his experience there in the broadcasting side of things too. So folks can read the Thursday Thoughts piece over at UtahStreetReport.com.
Without giving away too much, what were your thoughts on Olson and Roberts as broadcasters?
I definitely like both of them. They both bring an interesting perspective. There are definite it's interesting, and this is the same goes with McDonald at times, even though he's had a little bit more experience. You can definitely tell these guys are former players. They're not polished broadcasters. There are times, and this is, you know, the nerd in me that loves covering media and listening and paying attention to, you know, the different qualities of broadcasting, as a guy who formerly was a broadcaster, even. I really enjoy hearing, you know, the improvements that guys can make. There are times where they'll step over, you know, Joe Angel and talk over and you know, you hear those different kind of qualities in a guy that makes you realize they're not a full-time broadcaster. They are a former ball player, but at the same time, they give a great insight to, you know, to what's going on in the field, what could be going on behind the scenes. And everything from pitch selection and certain counts and, you know, situational hitting, both of those guys have done a good job from what I've heard, of laying that out for the fans. Obviously I watch way more games on television, than I get to hear on the radio. So these afternoon games have been a kind of a good, opportunity for me to give a listen to the radio broadcast instead of watching on TV. And, I thought both guys have done a great job so far of painting a good picture.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think Orioles fans know as well as anybody that some former players offer great insights and really help the broadcast, and some not so much.
Yeah, no, it's true. And it's funny, too, because you know you're going to get, you know, Greg Olson even mentioned it yesterday during the broadcast. He's going to be a homer. And not everybody likes that, but some people really do. And I don't mind it, you know, as long as you're recognizing that you're going to be a little bit of a homer. You know, you're going to say, we and us versus them sometimes, as opposed to the Orioles. You know, I don't mind that as long as it's recognized and as long as it, you know, that's fine by me, as long as it's not over the top homerism. There's nothing wrong with something like that, especially for a home.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think that I am fine with, broadcasters taking the perspective of the fans, you know, of you know, I'm working for the Orioles and I'm going to talk about the Orioles as the team that I care about. I think when I have a problem with it is when it bleeds over into lack of critical analysis, I guess you'd say, you know, the guys who...
Sure. And that's definitely not something that I've heard so far. And it's part of the reason I think that everyone... You know, I could be wrong in this, but I think everyone realizes that Jim Palmer is universally loved on Masson doing the broadcast, because he's not afraid to, you know, call out a player for something that went wrong or be critical of the team. I think that's something that's appreciated from him at times. And, of course, you can't get much in terms of stature, much better than Jim Palmer as a former
right.
player.
I mean, he's a true Oriole legend and a guy who really seems to know his stuff. And on the other side, you've got Mike Bordick, who, you know, I like Mike Bordick because he seems like a nice guy and everything, but he's not willing to be very critical of the Orioles. And that, I think that's, especially in a year like this, it's pretty glaring, you know?
Sure. It's tough to find things this season that are, you know, that are super happy with this club. But I also think Bordick, compared to when he started doing this a few years ago, I think he has improved in that over the years too. And I think it comes with time. Like I said, these former ball players who get into the broadcasting booth, it takes a while for you to, you know, get down the, kind of the spirit of it and the mechanics of it. They just want to, you know, talk like they normally would, to anyone else. And, you know, there's a different mechanic to it. And a different, different way to go about it. So it's nice to see guys at least improving upon it
That stuff sounds very interesting, so people definitely should check that out today at Utah Street Report. And of course you should go back and look at Andrew's story about Manny Machado's MVP case in massinsports.com, and I think on both sites you can find your archives of previous stories. If people want to find you on Twitter, Andrew, where should they look?
They can follow me at astetka. It's astetka. And I appreciate you plugging the pieces. Yeah, every Thursday morning at UtahStreetReport.com, like this morning, and then every Monday morning over at MassinSports.com is where they can read
my stuff.
All right,
great. Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
And that's going to do it for another edition of Locked On Orioles. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.